Welcome back to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. We're online at philhendryshow.com. Excuse me, I'm turn the fan off. And we're live here at the El Pacifico tonight, as we are each and every night. And if you're watching us on Phil TV in HD, we're also going to probably get into our front pages of the New York Times. It was interesting, before the show, during the during our pre-show rant.
Yeah.
I did what we used to call in our disc jockey days, I dropped the needle. I didn't drop the needle on a disc. What I did was figuratively drop the needle. I just went to the New York Times, and I knew that I wanted to look at August the 9th because that was the current date. But I also didn't know what year I was going for. I just went for 1977. And lo and behold, 1977, August 9th, was the day that the New York City Police Department put a call into the Yonkers Police Department and said to them, you know, I think we want to talk to David Berkowitz one more time because we've got a parking ticket issued to him for a car that matches the description of one that was in the area, and we want to interview him one more time, which is exactly what the NYPD then did on August the 10th. And by the early morning hours of August the 11th, 1977...
They got the Son of Sam. That was who the Son of Sam was?
Yeah, David Berkowitz. They arrested him, yeah. And it was funny because I had pulled up this New York Times. I went, wow, there it is. You know, I knew I was in the range of the dates, and I went to the 11th. There it was, front page article. This guy had been loose in the city of New York for a year. For a full year. From July until August, a year and a month, he had been out terrorizing the people of New York. He had been writing letters. Jimmy Breslin got involved. The media got involved. At one point, they offered to, I don't know, maybe I'm thinking of the Zodiac, but there, I think there was a talk show or something like that that asked him to call in. It was a circus, man. So we're going to be looking at that when we get a little bit deeper into the hour. Our number is 877-876-7445. We're online at philhendryshow.com. That's philhendryshow.com. We have live streaming video of our show every night. Which we are showing right now. You can also, of course, access thousands of hours of archived material, the greatest satire of talk radio, probably one of the greatest, and I'm saying this with all humility, but I got to say it, probably one of the greatest radio shows ever. We're very proud of the efforts of our show over the years, and we invite you to get a backstage pass. Now, we have a podcast coming up. It's dropping today, sometime today, and that will probably be out of our Milwaukee Lion archive. So we've got... Man, we got stuff coming from the left, from the right, from down the middle.
Yeah, man, we're like that, a pincer movement.
Yeah, it's a pincer movement of radio.
Exactly. It's a pincer movement of radio. We're going left. We're going right. We're going down the middle. And it's there for you at philhendryshow.com. All right, 877-876-7445. Before we get into anything else, I would like to get on the line here with the young man, R.C. Collins, joining us from Bradley Military Academy in Altadena, California, and we were playing some Van Halen earlier, R.C., and you wanted to talk about that, huh?
Well, yes, sir, Mr. Henry. First of all, I wanted to say from all the cadets at Bradley Military Academy, we enjoy your show, and we thank you very much for you doing it and everything, because it's really a lot of fun, and we're happy to listen to it. And I wanted to... talk to you a little bit, because I heard that you played Jump by Van Halen. We've been practicing that. We do have a band called the Cadets. It's just right now, it's me and Watson, who is the young junior cadet that you met the other night on the phone.
Yeah, I remember him.
Yeah, well, he plays keyboard, and I want to be very clear about something, and I don't want to be offensive neither. But what I do want to say is we're not gay, but we do have a... two-man group that's sort of like what that one group, the Pet Shop Boys, but we're not gay. And I wanted to make that statement.
Okay, all right, that's fine. You know, two-man band, is that supposed to mean you're gay?
Well, I mean...
What about Daryl Hall and John Oates?
Well, I mean, I'm talking about more contemporary, I guess. And
all right, so Tears for Fears and Pet Shop Boys, these are gay guys.
Well, I think if you look at the record, I mean, if you look at the evidence, and it is anecdotal, but it's pretty clear. And I don't have anything against gays or anything, and I know that the military code of justice is going to be changed for gays, but I don't want anybody to think we are. That's all.
Okay, nobody's going to think you're gay. And the more you talk about it, you understand, the more offensive it gets, you know, because it's
why is that?
Because it's like, you know, as Shakespeare said, methinks thou protesteth too much. And what he meant by that, before you ask me what he meant, because somehow I know you're going to ask me, he meant the more you say no, you didn't, the more you sound like yes, you did.
The more you say no, you didn't.
In other words, the more you say I'm not gay, I'm not gay, I'm not gay.
Okay, what do you say? I mean, you better ease into this, Mr. Henry, and don't
tell me to look, kid. I'm not. I don't mean to disrespect you.
And please don't call me kid. I'm just asking you to ease into what you're about to say, because you're about to say that I sound like a gay. And
no, I'm not going to say that. I'm just saying to you, don't keep saying it, because there would be people who would say, "Well, the more you say it, the more you sound like you." That's what you are. Look, why don't we get into the song, right?
Yeah, I wanted people to know that it's going to be me singing and Watson's going to play the Casio, which also is a keyboard machine, and the song that we're going to do is Jump. And
now you're the lead singer.
Yeah, I'm the lead singer. And our band is going to be at the Commandant's Ball, which will be one of the very first events of the senior season, okay? And we will be inviting the young ladies from Belmontview, which is the all-female academy, which is up on Schuyler. And they're going to be our guest as they is, you know, for everything.
All right, these are the young ladies that generally come to the dances that you guys hold?
Yes, sir, and we go to their dances.
Okay. So this is Jump, and RC, and your band is the Cadets.
Well, it's not RC and the Cadets. It's just the Cadets.
Okay.
All right, Watson.
Uh-huh.
Go to the keyboard. Okay. 1, 2, 1, 2, yeah. Turn it up. Yeah. We're not that much. Yeah.
Shut up, man.
Yeah. Can you hear that, Mr. Henry?
Yeah, we can hear it.
Yeah. Yeah. 2, 3. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Commandant's Ball. I'm RC Collins. You know what? I get up. And nothing lets me down. You got it tough. And it's the toughest around. And you know, yeah, baby, just how you feel. You gotta go, whoa, whoa, with the punches, and then you're real. You see me standing there by the record machine.
Okay, RC?
It's not the first that you've seen.
RC?
Hold on, what?
Hold on. Turn it off, man. Please. Okay.
Shut up. Hey, that was pretty good, but we got to work on that, Mr. Henry.
Yeah, you do, because I was also hearing some, sounds like the...
That was feedback, Watson. I knew it was feedback, because the guy on the radio just said it was feedback.
I don't know that.
Yeah, it was. Was it feedback, Mr. Henry?
No, I can't say what it was. It sounded like there was a high-pitched something or other, you know?
Yeah, he said it was high-pitched.
Right, high-pitched, you said.
Yeah, why don't you, you know what, what a gay, you're a gay.
What did he say?
He said the only high-pitched thing was me singing. Well, yeah, I have delayed puberty, so that's what's going on with that.
All right, well, look at, man, that was a very good effort, and we look forward to hearing more.
Which basically what that means is it blew chicken. Okay, that's fine.
Whatever, kid.
That was terrible.
Of course it was terrible. Of course it was terrible. But, he's singing into a phone, man.
Yeah, but how good could it be, man? That kid ain't going to play at a Commandant Ball. Why am I going to have him kiss a daughter?
Kiss the gunner's daughter?
Yeah.
Kiss a daughter. Wireman's going to have him kiss somebody's daughter. All right, we'll be back. The world-famous Phil Henry Show with our News and Information Hour here. Thanks to the Cadets and their version of Jump. We'll be right back. Phil Henry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show.
Welcome back to the world famous Phil Henry Show, and this is our news and information hour. And I was talking to the guys about Van Halen because RC put us in mind of the summer tour that didn't happen, you know, and it was called off. It was supposed to, the Van Halen tour was supposed to at least go through the summer. I don't know how long was it going to go.
That was going to go like a year or something.
No, it wasn't.
Well,
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't either. But I know it's supposed to go on a summer.
Well, and they were, and they, so what they did was they made the announcement, you know what, this sucks, we can't do it, and they, we're not getting along, and we hate each other. Okay, fine, you know, whatever. I mean, that to me was a statement of, I don't know. I don't know who talked to them, and I'm sure that they gave it their best. You would want them to say, you guys had a great run. We know that the band is done. We know you guys hate each other's guts, but you made this statement, you made this commitment to do this tour. Can't you suck it up long enough just to give this to the fans? And
they're probably all sick and tired of the fans.
What are you talking about, Van? They're not. What do you mean? Van Halen will never be sick of the fans. The fans gave them their power.
Yeah, they don't give a damn now about the fans or anything. All they want to do is, you know.
Yeah, what do you care, man? You're listening to Lil Wayne. You're listening to. Shut up, man.
Hey, what did I tell you, okay? Didn't I say the next time this happened?
I'm sorry.
No. I'm sorry ain't going to get it done. I ought to, by all rights, throw both of you bastards out of here. Don't look at... By all rights, I ought to throw both of you out of here.
Can I say something?
No, you can't say anything. You can't say anything. By all rights, I ought to kick both your asses out of here because I gave you warning after warning after... What I ought to do is fire you. That's what I ought to do.
I just want to say one thing.
Robert, if I have to say no, you don't get to say one more thing. One more time.
Your flag's open.
Well, what difference does it... Hold on. What difference does it make if my fly's open? Nobody can see it.
It was hanging out.
What are you doing? Look at it. I swear to God. All right, now. Van Halen broke up, and it was my feeling that they could have at least stayed together for the fans. That's, I think, where we last were. And then you said, Robert, what?
I said, they don't care about the fans anyway, so why even stay? They're not going to grow up, you know?
And then, but you started in with Lil Wayne and your usual racism.
No, I didn't mean it.
Shut up. Now, I'm going to let you say something if anything creeps into it.
Just say it all. Okay, I'm sorry. I apologize, Robert.
No.
I do. I apologize.
All right.
I just said that, well, I mean, I can't say anything about Jimi Hendrix because he's black.
You can say something about Jimi Hendrix. What are you talking about because he's black?
I thought maybe that would be a band that Robert would like.
All right. Get out.
I didn't do...
Get out! Get out!
What do I do?
You too. You get out.
I didn't do nothing.
Get out, both of you.
Get out of here. All I said was...
I heard what you said, you stupid, dumb, redneck biker ass. Get out of here.
I ain't no redneck.
No, but you're an idiot too. Get out. And I'll decide later whether I fired you guys or not. Can I say that he likes Jimi Hendrix? He's black. So anyway, as I was saying before I was so rudely interrupted, this was a tour that they might have, in my opinion, they might have continued doing, if not for any other reason than for the sake of the fans. They didn't do that, so that was the end of that romance. But I was talking to the guys. I said, you know, we were talking about Van Halen, they break up, and then I was thinking of other bands, and you know something, and this is honest to God, this is the truth. Most bands, in my opinion, most bands that stay together for decades, I believe most bands stay together far too long. I think bands stay together far beyond the natural expiration date, if you will. Far beyond what they should have stayed together for. And an example is, I was talking to the guys off the break. The Who was a great band. I'm not really sure I know when The Who broke up. Am I alone here? And I think I know why it missed me, because The Who tried to stay together after they lost Keith Moon, and then they got the new drummer, and I forget the name of that guy, Kenny Jones, and that the band, okay, they were fine, I guess. And then they just sort of, like, there was no more Who. Now, maybe they had a farewell tour that I missed, but to me, that band just kind of just fell apart like a, I don't know, just like an old newspaper that you take out to read for the 9 millionth time, and it just all of a sudden it's just scraps, you know? So when you think of bands like the Beatles, as tragic as they're, and I'm not talking, this isn't John Lennon dying. I mean, they broke up 10 years before that. When they fell apart because of Yoko. Who cares, man? That was probably the best run, and that was it for the Beatles. It was perfect. It was great. And when they talked to those guys years later, and they said, "Do you think you're going to get back together? Do you think you're going to be?" And they would be polite, and they'd say, "Well, you know, you never know." I remember there's a very famous interview with John Lennon during Monday Night Football, of all things, in halftime, and he's talking to Howard Cosell. He says, "Do you think you?" He says, you never know. Well, you knew, and I knew, and anybody that heard that interview knew, that ain't going to get back together. Why would they, man? By then, music had completely changed. But we're talking the late 70s. Now we're in the, you know, country rock and the freaking disco and new wave was hitting, and forget it. Another band that stayed together, and I'm not really sure they should have, and I guess maybe, and maybe now it's just interesting because they're a curiosity. I mean, who's ever really seen 70-year-old guys, you know, get up on stage and shred? And that's the Rolling Stones. That's almost like, it's beyond a caricature. Now it's, maybe it's breaking or blazing new territory. I don't know, you know. But to me, for my way of thinking, it's tremendous. All right, on the line with us here on the Phil Hendry Show. And by the way, we are, as I mentioned to you, we're online at philhendryshow.com. Backstage Pass gets you our live streaming video as it's happening right now. We are at the El Pacifico. If you're looking at a whole bunch of strange green screen stuff, it's just because that's what's loaded in, and it's pretty freaking bizarre. All right, 877-876-7445. Stephen Bozell joining us from Corona, California. How are you doing, Stephen?
Yes, sir. I'm doing good, Mr. Henry, and thank you for having me on your program. I appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
I wanted to mention to you that I was a very big Van Halen fan, and I had gone to see them on the 84 tour, and I also was a very big fan of Van Halen when I went and saw them on the I don't know, 5150, I think it's 5150.
Was that the one with Sammy Hagar?
The one that had Love Walk In and I can't remember the name of that. When It's Love. When it's Love, if you know the song When It's Love.
Yeah, that's I know that song. So that's the first album with Sammy Hagar?
I like that album a lot. I liked it even more than David Lee Roth, and I remember when I told friends of mine, because I was in, my senior year in high school, and I told friends of mine that I enjoyed that very much, and that put me way, way past being friends with them anymore, because they thought it was very, you know, sort of, I guess, you know, now the kids say gay, but I think they just thought it was too, you know, I can't use the word, but sissy.
Yeah, no, it was, there was a definite sort of party feel that Van Halen had with David Lee Roth that became the art rock band, you know?
Well, I don't know what,
How do I say the art rock band? They became a band that, they became songwriters, as opposed to just rock and rollers.
Yeah, I mean, it was Sammy Hagar, and I told my friends, you know, that Sammy Hagar is the guy that did I Can't Drive 55, and he also did Bad Motor Scooter, and he also done all of those songs. And so I said to my friends, I said, you don't understand, Sammy Hagar, he kick out the jams, you know, and he can, you know, he's every bit as good as David Lee Roth, and I think that what he's going to do is make him better and everything, okay? So what happened was, and my friends are all, yeah, sure, and I said, I swear to God. And so now comes this album, and I put it on for my friends. We were riding around in my dad's car at the time. He had a good sound system because my father drove up a big Buick Riviera at the time. And out come that song, you know, and then you close your eyes, Love Walks In, you know?
Yeah, Love Walks In.
Yeah, and it just was so, it was so sad because my friends were right. And it softened, everything softened on me. And from that day forward, I've never been able to get back my edge, because I knew that I had invested my reputation on Sammy Hagar, and that album come out and it was soft and sweet. And now I was soft and sweet in the eyes of my friends, you know. And
okay, well, all right, Steve, I hope you get that edge back, you know.
Well, I mean, you're going to leave me hanging with that? Oh, God.
I'm afraid I have to. Thank you. 877-876-7445, Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.
Okay, so now I'm really soft and sweet.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-7445, world-famous Phil Hendry Show, and online at philhendryshow.com. And we having some video problems here tonight. Well, let me just double-check here and make sure that we've got our...
That we have our DDR working properly.
I think we do. And we have just been sort of checking a little bit. Oh, God, there goes... Was that? We've been looking at a little bit of the Olympics, and we saw one of these BMX riders... This kid that bit the dust. Oh, she's a Yank. She's got the patch. Okay, you guys can come back in. God, man.
Yeah, I just want to see the race.
Okay, you understand what I'm saying? I'm going to keep banning you guys from the studio if you keep screwing up.
I understand.
So this girl, she ate it, huh?
Yeah, she looked like she's doing a jump and then just ate it on a jump.
Yeah.
Well, this is the women's BMX. That's what it is, Dan. And eighth in the standings is the Yank, Elise Post. We got a girl at 16th. You know, the people that are leading this are the Australians as well as the Brits and the
New Zealanders.
All right. Taking a look at other news, stuff that is really interesting to me. You know me, man. I love this kind of stuff. Check this out. Now, I swear to God, I will make this interesting. I swear to God, I'll make it interesting. Fossil by fossil, scientists over the last 40 years have suspected that their models for the more immediate human family tree, the single trunk, straight as a ponderosa pine, up from Homo habilis to Homo erectus to Homo sapiens, were oversimplified. Now, what does that mean? What does that mean? It means that scientists have believed that while there were all these other hominids, Neanderthal, for instance, the Australopithecine man, for instance, and all other kinds of two-legged and sometimes, walking upright and maybe even a fairly good-sized brain hominids that were inhabiting the Earth, and at this particular time, mostly Africa, that the human family, you and me, we didn't come from a branch on the tree. We were the trunk. We went straight from the beginning, all the way straight up the trunk, and we never branched out. We never, there's no other type of hominid that influenced us. We went from being, as I just said, the Homo habilis to Homo erectus to Homo sapien, which is what we are now, which is a human. That's what scientists believe. They believe that we were on the trunk, and all of these others, these dead ends, were branches that went out and boop, did what a branch does. It stops, and that's the end of that. Well, now they believe that that's just oversimplified. They now believe that they, and to quote the line, a day of serious revision may be well at hand. The discovery of three new fossil specimens announced on Wednesday is the most compelling evidence yet for multiple lines of evolution in our own genus, which is Homo. And you can laugh if you want to. You guys can't laugh because I've had it with you, okay?
Yeah, well, how can you not laugh at that?
Yeah.
How can you not laugh? Are you telling me to the word Homo, you got to laugh? Is there some kind of a, is that the code?
Well, you're kind of expected to.
Oh, okay. So if you're an idiot... Not a man, necessarily, but a stupid man. You got, every time you hear the word homo, you got to go, is that what you got to do?
Well, I mean, not really.
Oh, there you go. Especially if I'm speaking scientifically here, I don't want to have to deal with kicking you guys out of here again. The fossils showed that there were at least two contemporary homo species in addition to Homo erectus living in East Africa as early as 2 million years ago. Now, as you know, it is clearer and clearer and clearer using mitochondrial DNA... And I know I'm not pronouncing that properly, but who cares? That the origin of the human family is East Africa, if you will, the Garden of Eden, East Africa.
You said only like 1,500 individuals left Africa, right?
That's what they believe. They now believe, scientists are believing, that it only took 1,500 individuals to go, quote, out of Africa and eventually populated the entire world. Now, why only 1,500? Well, for starters, you had to traverse a geographic barrier called the Sahara Desert. By that point, it was beginning to become a desert. We know that Africa at one time, all of Africa was tropic, subtropic. We know that the Sahara Desert had trees. We know this from archaeological evidence. We know this from just, you know, from the natural history that we've been able to ascertain that. And at one time, it was a forested area. We have found fossils of very, very early Homo individuals living in a forested area. Now, by the time we were getting ready to go out of Africa, this had become a very arid desert, and it was a very difficult place to leave on foot. It wasn't like we weren't flying over it. We weren't going in boats. We were like most of, we were walking. And to, if you really, really, if you were a really motivated individual, for whatever reason, who were those people that first went out of Africa? Who were, what species, you know? They were not yet human. I don't believe that they were, the human, that part of the, our evolutionary path had taken place. It might have at some point in Africa. But they were individuals that were very motivated. They want to leave Africa. It's a tough place to farm in. It's a tough place to find wild game. If most of the population, the whole population of the world was there, it would be tougher and tougher for you to find something to eat. There was no farming at that time. But the wild crops that, if you were hunting and gathering, the wild crops that were available were very, very limited. Africa is a northeast axis continent. North-south. North-south axis continent. What have we learned?
You can't go north and south without the climate changing a lot.
Exactly. So when you go north and south, the climate changes radically, and you can't, as a farmer, trade crop packages with a farmer in the north, because what you are growing in the south may be fine in the south. You can't grow it up there, man.
What about all Asia, though?
Asia is an east-west axis. And because Asia is on an east-west axis, meaning you have all of this latitude going east and west, a farmer in Eurasia could trade crop packages with a farmer in China, and it would grow in either place. You're on that latitude. The climate's the same, for the most part. So to get the hell out of Africa, there were some pretty motivated individuals. They had to go across a desert. They had to traverse water. They had, you know, it was a son of a bitch. These are very hardy people that went out of Africa. And when they finally did, they don't believe that any more than 1,500 survived to make the trip.
Those ones went down to, like, became Indians and stuff?
No, they didn't become Indians. It's not very likely that they went, those 1,500 individuals went any further than the Middle East. The Middle East makes sense. People say, well, the Middle East, why the Middle East? Well, hello, what's your first stop once you leave Africa? What's the first really fertile area once you get out of Africa? The Middle East! It's not like all of a sudden, aha, the Middle East. I saw it in a dream. No, it's the place the guy said, this is good enough for me, man. I just want to get the hell out of it. Well, yeah, don't you think? No, I ain't going anywhere. Well, my brother wants to take, well, your brother can go. See you later, Charlie. That's great. Good for you. I don't know, man. There might be something over here. Go ahead. Bye. I'm staying here. That's a son of a bitch. I ain't, that was kind of a hard trip. You got it. And besides where we, and at that time in the Middle East, there was all kinds of game, all kinds of wild crop packages and stuff. So it was a perfect thing. Of course you're going to stay in the Middle East. And the guys that cut out, they either went due south along the southern Asian continental coast there and wound up in Australia, or they went northeast across the huge Asiatic continent there, across the steppes, up into the Bering Sea area, across the strait and down into North America. And some made a big left turn and went up into Europa. The discovery of these three new fossil specimens announced Wednesday is the most compelling evidence yet for multiple lines of evolution in our genus, Homo, scientists said. The fossils showed that there was at least two contemporary Homo species in addition to Homo erectus living in East Africa as early as 2 million years ago. Uncovered from sandstone at Kubi Fora Badlands near Lake Turkana in Kenya, the specimens included A well-preserved skull of a late juvenile with a relatively large brain case and a long, flat face, which has been designated KNMER-62000, or 62000 for short.
Wait a minute. Got a long, flat face and it's a kid?
Yeah, they got a big, like, a case.
A brain case. Got a big skull. There's a lot of place there for brains.
That human?
Yeah, it's one of our ancestors. It bears a striking resemblance to the enigmatic cranium known as 1470, the center of debate over multiple lineage since its discovery in the same area in 1972. If the 62,000 skull showed that 1470 was not a single odd individual, the other two specimens seemed to provide a vital piece of evidence that had been missing. The specimen 1470 had no mandible or lower jaw. Now, what did we learn from the Casey Anthony trial?
That your car going to smell?
That your car's going to smell?
Yeah.
No. You guys don't remember. The mandible falls away from the skull very easily because of the ligaments that hold it to the skull. And so it oftentimes is missing from skulls because it will, very shortly, within, you know, weeks, it just drops away from the skull and may get, kicked around by scavengers and so on. So it was missing this mandible. It had been missing. The specimen 1470 had no mandible or lower jaw. The new finds included an almost completely lower jaw, considered to be the most complete mandible of an early Homo yet found. And it... Don't you laugh.
What are you supposed to do when a guy said the early Homo?
Just grow up, huh? For once. And part of another lower jaw. The fossils were collected between 2007 and 2009 by a team led by Meave and Lewis Leakey. Man, these Leakeys. The mother and daughter paleoanthropologists of the Kubi 4 research project and members of the famous African fossil hunting family. God.
That the same Leakey that went down there back in the 70s?
These Leakeys are everywhere, man. They just leak everywhere. They're leaking all over the place.
Who's Leakey?
This Lewis Leakey and Louise Leakey and the Leakeys are these archaeologists. They're the ones that found, when I was a kid, the Leakeys were at it. They'll never quit. Never. Now they have their daughter, Meave Leakey. Jeez, at least they didn't name her with an L, you know.
Yeah, but it's in the same part of the alphabet.
L-M, you're right. The next one, the grandkid, is probably going to be who?
Probably be Negro. I didn't mean that. I'm sorry. Shut up, man.
Hey. Negro.
Why would they name him that?
Probably just died to the knee.
So the Leakeys, huh? They're a mother and father and a daughter and a whole deal. Dr. Meave Leakey is the wife of Richard Leakey, a son of Lewis and Mary Leakey, who produced the original evidence supporting Africa's central place in human origins. Those are the discoveries that were made when I was a punk kid, and every time you turned around, there were the Leakeys. All right, let's take a break. I'd love to go into this more and more and more and more, but I'm not going to because then I could go geek on you guys real fast, and I probably already have. We'll be right back. Negro Leakey.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean anything.
Yeah.
Truth. Phil Hendry is Show. Our will be right bitch. Back. The Phil Hendry Show. You're listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
All right, welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-7445. Don't forget, today's the day, a new episode, episode 28 of the Free Phil Hendry Podcast drops, and I believe it will be a Milwaukee Lion podcast, one of the archived Milwaukee Lion podcasts, in anticipation of a new season of Milwaukee Lion football. It starts on the 19th, and it'll be carried live here on the Phil Hendry website. At philhendryshow.com, and will also be carried as a podcast that you guys can listen to on the website, those of you with a backstage pass. Also, don't forget to hit up our shop. Every $30 purchase this week until Sunday night at midnight gets two free shot glasses. And if you're watching Phil TV in HD, there is our shot glass. That's a beautiful thing, man. Look at that.
Pretty nice, man.
2-ounce shot? Oh, yeah. I think we may just have to bust this out. By the way, the color scheme on the on our Phil TV tonight, Robert, is all jacked up. This is a yellow sunburst coming from my head, and on TV, it looks decidedly orange. All right. So we figured out who the Leakeys were and why I care about them. Man, I don't know. You know.
Yeah, the Leaky, man, all they do is, all day long is leak.
Yeah, they're leaking everywhere.
All right, well, thank God we have people like that, man, because they're the people that keep the world running. All right, Neil Armstrong, the first man to walk on the moon, was recovering on Wednesday from heart surgery days after his 82nd birthday. It wasn't clear where the surgery occurred or whether Armstrong, or where he was recuperating, I should say. A NASA spokesman who talked to Armstrong's wife, Carol, said only the former astronaut was recovering. His birthday is coming up on Sunday. A Facebook statement from NASA Administrator Charles Bolden wished Armstrong a quick recovery, and we do too here on the Phil Henry Show. It was cardiac bypass surgery, he said, Mr. Bolden. Neil's pioneering spirit will surely serve him well in this challenging time. Well, that's not a very good line.
Why?
Well, that bothers me. This challenging time. I guess if you're 82, it's going to be challenging, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I've got not any spring chicken, man.
Well, I mean, it's just Neil's pioneering spirit will surely serve him well in this challenging time. Is he okay?
No, it sounds regular surgery.
It's cardiac bypass surgery. And the entire NASA family is holding the Armstrong family in our thoughts and prayers. I hope okay. Well, Neil Armstrong, the first man to walk on the moon, he and Buzz Aldrin, they planted the U.S. flag on the lunar surface July 20, 1969. Armstrong commanded the Apollo 11 spacacraft that landed on the moon on July 20, 1969, and he radioed back to Earth the historic One Giant Leap for Mankind. They spent 3 hours walking on the moon. A message Wednesday on Aldrin's Twitter account also wished Armstrong well. You know, and Buzz Aldrin's doing great.
Yeah, he went on to Dancing with the Stars, too.
Yeah, maybe that's what Neil Armstrong should do. Buzz Aldrin, how old is he, man? He was older than Armstrong. He's older than Neil Armstrong.
He is?
Yeah, Armstrong was still in his 30s. Hell, you know, I don't know. Armstrong was 39 when they walked on the moon. And I think Aldrin was in his 40s. But every time I see Buzz Aldrin, the guy looks fantastic. And that was the one guy, the rumor mill had it, when they came back from the moon. And this was the rumor mill of the 70s. It was a crazy time, you know, and every kind of stupid thing. And the rumor mill was that Buzz Aldrin came back from the moon and flipped out or otherwise was sitting on flagpoles or something like that, you know.
They thought he'd like... He got all flipped out by outer space.
Well, I mean, here was the thing they said was Aldrin had stood on the surface of the moon and he'd looked at the magnificence of the universe, and when he came back to Earth, he was back in the same old mud ball and he just went into a complete depression. Now, it's sort of true. He did have a battle with depression. But it wasn't some psychotic flip out, and he seems to be doing very well now. And I've seen him interviewed multiple times, and I saw him interviewed for the series From Earth to Moon, and all kinds of stuff. It was very interesting that he's, you know, going strong. Armstrong and his wife married in 1999 and made their home in the Cincinnati suburb of Indian Hill, but he's largely stayed out of public view in recent years. He spoke at Ohio State University during a February event honoring fellow astronaut John Glenn of the 50th anniversary of Glenn becoming the first Americano to orbit the Earth. In May, Armstrong joined Gene Cernan, the last man to walk on the moon, at Pensacola Naval Air Station in Florida to support the opening of the National Flight Academy, which aims to teach math and science to kids through an aviation-oriented camp. Yeah. Good job. And we hope you do get better, sir. All right, final news story here.
This is interesting, man. It's this guy trying to cover it up and everything.
All right, is this a story you...
Yeah, read the story.
A Long Island man suspected of faking his drowning in a plot to collect life insurance is receiving psychiatric treatment at a hospital, his lawyer said. Son is charged in a case of faked drowning, August 7th, 2012. Man suspected of faking his death has returned to New York. Follow us on Twitter and like... Oh, I'm sorry.
Right there.
The man, Raymond Roth, age 47, of Massapequa, is being treated on Long Island, said his lawyer, Brian Davis, who added that the Roth family had taken Mr. Roth to the hospital late last week. Mr. Davis said that he expected his client would face charges. Mr. Davis said Mr. Roth was depressed and under medication and would be released when doctors determine he's no longer a danger to himself. A spokesman for the Nassau County District Attorney declined to comment. Mr. Roth was reported missing by his son July 28th at Jones Beach, but 5 days later he was stopped by the police in South Carolina for speeding. The son now, Jonathan Roth, age 22, faces charges including conspiracy to commit insurance fraud. Raymond Roth's wife, Ivana Roth, said last week that she had believed that her husband had died until she discovered emails suggesting a plot. A version of this article appeared in print on August. Get this out of here, bud.
That's what it said.
So what the hell is that all about? You think the wife knew?
But apparently she tried to say she didn't know. I think she did.
I think the whole stinking family stinks. I think they're up to it to the... I don't know. What the hell? Faking your own death, man. You can't do that stuff anymore, you know? Did you read the... There have been a million stories of these jackasses that try to fake... The funniest one, and I do say funny, and I underline the word, was some clown who was up to his ass in hock. He was on it. He was one step ahead of the law, this guy. He was one of these investment bankers. Anyway, make a long story short, he got into his private plane. He got on the phone and said... He got on the horn and told the air traffic control, oh, my God, I've lost control of my plane, oh, this, that, right? Then he bailed out of the plane... He put it on autopilot. The plane crashes short of the Gulf of Mexico. But he winds up anyway trying to hide out from the cops. It, like 12 hours later, they found the guy.
12 hours?
Yeah. It wasn't any kind of a, you know, the world-famous Phil Henry show. It wasn't any kind of a world-famous Phil Henry show. It's produced by Dan Northcraft and by me, Phil Henry. Get a backstage pass at philhenryshow.com and enjoy it, baby. Enjoy the thousands of hours of access to thousands of hours of a great programming that you have access to. All right, we'll see you tonight. Till then, let that be a lesson to you.
Phil Henry.